Hi, Donna.
Hi, good morning.
Now, maybe I could get you to start with a brief definition. What is community and continuing care?
Well, community and continuing care is really supposed to be the foundation of our entire health care system. And what we're talking about here are the health services that take place in our communities and in our homes, that is, outside of doctors' offices and clinics and hospitals, the acute care system. Services that many seniors and people with disabilities rely on in order to remain healthy at home and really active and engaged members of their communities. These services are essential to maintaining people's quality of life and their independence, their dignity, and they're also crucial to the long-term sustainability of our healthcare system. They function as in many cases preventative measures, sort of wellness-oriented measures. They're focused on keeping people healthy as long as possible in their own homes and communities, and so they're very important to the healthcare system, and that's why we're talking about foundations. And our study is the first comprehensive examination of what has been happening in community and continuing care. And I guess just to be a little more concrete, we're looking particular in our study at long-term care, long-term residential care, nursing homes, if you will, home nursing care, where people can have a registered nurse come into their homes to provide care, as well as home support, which is the sort of personal support, help with housekeeping and maintaining good nutrition, those kinds of services.
I want to get to the report in a moment and what you found in your report. But so it sounds by what you're describing about the sector that really it affects almost everybody at some point in their lives. They're gonna intersect with the community and continuing care.
Exactly. Every one of us will at some point require this kind of care. And also, though, I really want to stress that in terms of our overall healthcare system, these services are really important. Our report, in a sense, it's a 10-year checkup on the recommendations that were made. There was a Royal Commission on Healthcare and Cost in BC called the Seton Commission. It reported in 1991. Its report was called Closer to Home. And one of its key recommendations was that in order to ensure high quality universal public health care for British Columbians now and in the future, we should be looking at transferring resources from the acute care system, which is really crisis-oriented, into more preventative, holistic kinds of health services, which are exactly the kinds of services that take place in the community and in the home. So our report is a 10-year checkup, and what we found, one of the key things to remember in this period of time in the 90s, of course, is that at the same time that BC and other provinces were trying to reform their healthcare systems in ways that would be sustainable cost-wise in the future, and also in response to, as you said in your introduction, solid research. The research is there's a consensus that these kinds of services are, when they're appropriate, they're the kind of things that people want. It's good quality care and it's cost effective. At the time that the provinces were trying to reform their healthcare systems, of course, we had massive cuts in federal transfer payments for healthcare. So what we saw happen here in BC was that the acute care system, in particular hospital beds, were significantly downsized in the 1990s by 46%, in fact. However, we did not see a corresponding increase in investment in community and continuing care. And so we found some really disturbing trends and some very disturbing implications for our overall healthcare system as a result of, you know, downsizing in acute care without the appropriate investment in community and continuing care services.
I understand that it also falls outside the current interpretation of the Canada Health Act.
Yes, that is one of the very key problems with these services, is that more and more healthcare is taking place outside of hospitals and doctors' offices. However, the way that the Canada Health Act is interpreted and has always been interpreted is that it only covers services that are provided within the acute care system and in clinics and hospitals. So as we have the acute care system downsized, and we have, and you may have heard there's a term that people refer to that people are discharged sicker and quicker from hospitals. So things happen like, you know, your prescription drugs are covered when you're in the hospital. As soon as you're at home, you have to pay for them out of your own pocket. And in terms of these continuing and community care services, what you have is real inconsistency and no right to coverage. Some of the services are covered publicly, others are not, others have user fees attached to them, and eligibility and so on can be changed really at any level by simply a policy change. And so one of the key messages that we're trying to deliver with this report is that if in fact we believe, and I think it's pretty clear that Canadians and British Columbians do still believe in the principles of the Canada Health Act and Medicare, and that is that medically necessary services should be universally available to everyone regardless of people's ability to pay for them, then we really clearly have to bring community and continuing care services under the umbrella of the public health care system.
What are the pressures that led to them being excluded?
Well, they were never excluded in such an active way as they were simply not included at the beginning. My understanding is that the founder of Medicare, of course, Tommy Douglas, really saw the bringing of the hospitals and the physician care under the Canada Health Act as really only a first step, and he always envisioned a much more complete system that would cover all of these sites of care as well as prescription drugs and so on. Now, of course, there's been resistance. There's always been resistance among particular interests to Medicare and the public system. However, if we're concerned about maintaining a universal public system and a cost-effective public system, it's penny-wise and pound-foolish to actually not include these within the public system now, because so much more care takes place in those areas, and the evidence is very clear that public, not-for-profit health care is better quality care as well as more cost-effective and more efficient.
So when you studied this, to what extent has the system been affected in the 10 years? You said you did a 10-year checkup. What did you find?
Well, what we found, as I said, we found significant hospital downsizing, 46% less hospital stays for British Columbians over the 1990s. Now, we would have expected a corresponding increase in community and continuing care services, and this would have been in line with the recommendations of the Seton Commission closer to home. In fact, that's not what we found. We found that long-term care beds have actually fallen by 18% over the decade, and there's thousands of seniors on waiting lists for publicly funded long-term care beds currently. Home nursing has grown only by 13% over the entire decade. And remember, BC's population grew significantly, as well as the primary population that relies on these services has also increased significantly. So that went up by only 13%. Home support actually declined by 19% over the decade. And what we're finding basically is that people in the least acute levels of care, whether it's residential care or home care and home nursing, people with the least acute care needs have basically been shut out of the system. They no longer have access to publicly funded care. And that has got really serious implications for, like I said, the real cost-effective, preventative, early intervention aspects of this care. People have been shut out. We also found that the people who rely most on this care we're talking about some of the most vulnerable members of our society. This is really, I really see it as a social justice issue, because we find that, okay, the people who mostly rely on these services are seniors, most of them are women, and people with disabilities. 71% of senior women in this province have annual incomes of $10,000 or less. 94% of people with disabilities in this province have got incomes of annual incomes of $10,000 or less. And so when we're cutting them off from publicly provided care, we're basically leaving them on their own, or we're putting more and more burdens on family members and friends in terms of unpaid care. And that has got short and long-term effects, in that people's health deteriorates. They end up in our emergency wards, in emergency beds, and so on. We also are seeing a growth of a two-tiered system within community and continuing care in the province. For-profit corporations have been really aggressively investing in community and continuing care in BC, and they're able to do that because of these gaps in the system. However, I have to stress that only a small fraction of the people who need the services actually have the resources to pay for them out of their own pockets. But in the overall healthcare system, allowing this growing privatization also really leads to more inefficiencies and more costs for the overall healthcare system.
I'm wondering if you can just very briefly summarize the recommendations of your report.
We have three key recommendations, and the first is that the provincial government has to immediately and very forcefully pursue a cost-sharing arrangements with the federal government to bring all community and continuing care programs and services under the public health care system. We're saying these services have to be publicly funded, publicly delivered, and not for profit, and we need really strong legislation that guarantees the right to quality health care no matter where those health care services are delivered. Secondly, we're calling on the government of BC to reinvest in public and not-for-profit health care. The evidence is absolutely clear on this, that not-for-profit care is more efficient, higher quality, cost-effective. And so we need to reinvest in ourselves. And I'd also add, there's a huge federal surplus right now. There's a provincial budgetary surplus. The money is there, and we're all going to need these services. We simply have to ask ourselves how we're going to pay for them, and if we're going to continue to pay for them collectively so that we guarantee the best cost-effective care as well as care available to everyone who needs it. And finally, we really need more research into the implications of privatization of community and continuing care. This is, as I said, in BC, the first look at what's happening and what the implications are. And so a lot of this is going on without any real tracking of what the implications are for people and for the healthcare system. And there needs to be more research before it's too late.
Okay, well, thanks very much for starting us out with the research, Donna.
Great, thank you. I can say people can find a summary of the report on our website, www.policyalternatives.ca.
Great.